Richard, we are back, and what I would like to do is finish up on one thing that I have to ask you. Now, remember, we were talking about lighting, and what I'd like to know is, how do you light the things that you light in your photographs?
Well, just like I never have a preconceived notion of what the photograph's going to turn out like, it's really all happening on the fly. I've put in my books that I think that my skills are that I'm a good conceptualizer, I think I have a good sense of color, and I'm a good preparer. And I think those are very important elements that for people to really reflect on. I think that this is a thinking person's game. If you're going to do it well, you want to think about it beforehand. I used to go to sleep at night sort of thinking, trying to think, how can I come up with an idea that's original? I set a very high bar for myself. I say all the time, what can I do that I've never seen? What can I reach for that I haven't done or I haven't seen done before? And every time I want to keep it fresh. So one of the strange things that probably keeps my work fresh in the artistic side and the glamour side is I always really do things I've never done before, and therefore I really don't know how to do them. And in the sense, but on the other hand, I work out in advance the sort of probability that this is going to be at least interesting by doing this. Now, as far as lighting is concerned, obviously I have, you know, lighting in different shapes and forms. I've got a number of different pro lighting power packs and heads, and I've got umbrellas and diffusers, and I've got soft boxes and things like that. But the truth is, I'm not one of these people who ever swears by any particular thing. I find that light is light. If I use an umbrella or a softbox or direct light, I'm happy with any of them. And I use all of them, and I don't really... and sometimes I start off doing it one way, and it'll suddenly be a different way. For example, if you look on my series of my Spartan Warrior Woman, which was shot in the Hollywood Hills, that's one of my proudest work. I remember I shot that with one light as the sun was going down, and I had an umbrella on it, on the light, but the umbrella blew over because of wind. And so I had to make do on the spot with just a 7-inch reflector aimed at the model instead. And I just shot it that way instead, and it came out fine. So I find that I use all the different, you know, lights and all the different modifiers without really regard for thinking anything's that special. I'm not a sort of purist who says, well, I'm going to get a finer pinpoint of light by doing it in this particular way as opposed to another way. To me, light is light and color is color, and they're all glorious in my eyes, and you can make them all excellent. I think that on a shoot, in some shoots that are my artistic stuff, I've done it with one light, and in some of them I've done it with 8 lights. But I'm always looking for, you know, the correct exposure. That's a very important thing to me. I do believe in using a light meter, and I pretty much, in my glamour work, use shadowless lighting, in the sense that... the background I see is lit as well as the foreground,
exactly.
So you don't really see shadow, and I also light the model the same on both sides of her face and body, so it tends to be shadowless, which is probably something I'm more comfortable with than shadows.
Yeah, and I wish a lot of photographers who submit work to us would listen to this very closely, what you just said about lighting, because we get those photos with those shadows, and we just can't use them.
Well, I don't. And a couple of things to that, if I might.
Sure.
I don't use assistants. So when it comes to light, and the reason I don't use assistants is because I really get joy out of hard work. I don't want to be helped. I feel like sort of cheating if I'm helped. The second reason is I want to feel at the end of the day really satisfied that this was something I fought for alone. It's like, you know, a mountaineer sort of probably wants to go up the mountain on his own and do it, you know, and doesn't want to be helped that much. You know, there are certain people who want to do these things in a solitary spirit and choose to do it that way. A marathon runner, for example. I think that... Also, I'm very sensitive on a shoot. If I tell somebody to do something, I don't want to be in that position of sort of them having done it wrong, and then me having to snap at them, no, you're supposed to do it that way. And then after that, I would think to myself, oh, God, you know, did I embarrass him in front of the model, and did I say the wrong thing?
See.
I don't. And it also interrupts the flow of a shoot.
Yeah.
So I merely prefer to do the work myself, and I like to, I don't think there's anything shameful about hard work, and there's nothing shameful about doing it yourself without help. I think a lot of very famous pro photographers who are friends of mine, who sometimes come to my house and use my location, they turn up with a, you know, maybe 4 assistants, and they all prepare mightily for this great, you know, setting that they've set, and I I sort of wait for the first picture, and I think it's going to be something marvelous. It's going to trump anything I've ever done. And I look at it, and I think to myself, well, I could have done that. And
Richard, come on now.
All the time on my own.
Come on, Richard.
I think people are lazy. I think they use assistants very often because they get lazier and lazier the more they get. The more they develop as pros.
I see. I want to get to your house, but I have, speaking with you, I have a thousand other questions, but we're going to get to the house. But body painting, can you tell me a little bit about your experiences with the body painting?
Yeah. I have a very different take, I think, from anybody on body painting. I'm not really interested in, I tell the model in a sort of gentle way, but teasing, but to be firm, right in front of the body painting artist, I basically say, I'm not here to represent you as a body artist. And I say to the model, I'm not here to just see you painted by him. I'm here to create whatever the concept we're after. So, for example, if it's a tiger, I'm interested in a tiger. I'm not interested in you being represented as being painted as a tiger.
Uh-huh.
So I think what happens, the mistake that I think almost always that I've ever seen in body painting, is you've got lots of talented body painters, and you've got photographers who haven't really been exposed to shooting body painting. So they get terribly excited. Oh, my God, isn't she painted gloriously? Oh, my God, I have to capture you standing there looking like that with that beautiful paint. That's actually the last thing in my mind. I say to myself, you know, it's got to be about the context. The most important thing to me is the first thing is the background, not the model. The model has to fit the background. It has to all seamlessly come together as something interesting. And therefore, I couldn't care less about just, you know, shooting the model just because she's being painted. That model has to be doing a series of dynamic actions in a proper context that's going to be constantly interesting. And that's very much how I work. So it's a very dynamic process and not the usual, what I see as the static process of, oh, I'm thrilled to have just shot somebody who happened to be painted very nicely.
But speaking of models, though, Richard, I have to, once again, another thousand questions have came, and we will get to the house, believe me. But
right.
Speaking of models, looking at your website,
yes.
What is the secret to coming in contact with such gorgeous women? I mean, I know everyone is supposed to highlight their best, but the young ladies that we see featured on your website are flawless. What are the backgrounds of some of these quote-unquote models?
Let me answer that. It segues slightly backwards for a second into the body painting because it relates to that in a strange way.
Okay.
In my glamour work, you'll see on my site that there's basically no nudity at all. I think there's only two shots in which you see a breast. Both occasions were reasons why I thought it was appropriate. But you won't see... there's generally no nudity on my site. Now, I'm not against nudity.
I think Cherie. I think one of the models...
I think Cherie because I did her under a shower, and I think Cherie,
okay.
I did one thing where there's another model called Claire.
Uh-huh.
But I very rarely do it, and I would not have done that had they not wanted to do it that way. It's not that I'm against it, but it's just, you know, I do it because... I probably did it because I did it so rarely, so it didn't matter to me.
Yeah.
I know very well that each shoot I do, or a lot of shoots I do, I could say, for example, to the model, I want you to do an implied nude or an artistic nude. I feel that that's not my thing. I don't want to judge other people for doing it. I suspect that a lot of photographers, you know, just want to do it for the sake of getting a girl to get undressed. I'm not really interested in that. And so I don't do nudity on my site. The reason I relate that to is just as a sort of an amusing thought, if you like, to my artistic work, is strangely enough, in my artistic work, all my body-painted girls are buck naked.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So it's not on my glamour side that they're naked, it's
yeah.
on the artistic side they're naked, but purely painted because you can't have a tiger with a bra and panties.
Exactly.
It takes away from any sense of authenticity and becomes a bit of a joke. So those are the only areas where I deal with that. As far as models are concerned, strangely enough, I pay less attention to beauty than you might suspect. I think that if we, I think my models look, you know, I don't know if the flawless is the right word, but I try to make them...
they're gorgeous.
I try to make the image as pleasing as I can, but that's a reflection of, if you like, good taste in composition, exposure, and lighting. You're seeing a model at a moment of her best. You've got a good makeup artist. You've got good styling.
Mm-hmm.
You've got an understanding of what flatters a girl's body position best.
Mm-hmm.
You try and fight for a certain attitude and expression. You try try and light it correctly and expose for it correctly. I think that the whether it's, you know, beauty is so subjective. I have a sea of faces and bodies on my site, and I don't spend my time, you know, to me, you know, all of them are hot in their own way. But I think that it's not so much about the person who comes to me who is so stunning. I think most people, when you see them, are not so stunning. I think makeup, no question, it has a dramatic effect on changing a person's appearance and confidence level. I think styling is important. What you wear has to be somehow something that really is appropriate for you. I think, obviously, the lighting and the exposure are fundamental in the posing. So I think that it's an entire amount of sort of accumulation of things coming together that create the end effect. I don't see individual models. I see most people you know, you're capturing a moment in time at their best, and when I see them the rest of the time, I'm not particularly intimidated and perhaps less impressed than you might think. I think it's just an individual taste what one likes. I have a certain type of model that I go for that I find attractive and photogenic. And sometimes you're caught in a situation where you have somebody who has a great body, but you don't feel their face is that photogenic. And some people who are photogenic don't have such a great body, and then there are some people who are photogenic and who don't have great range of expression.
So many different combinations,
And so it's a tremendous amount of combinations. Yeah. I'm not remotely intimidated. I think photography is, in a sense, been so, you know, good for me. I think people should live their fantasies. I think that I saw women in a different way before I got into shooting than I do now. I see them as much more vulnerable than perhaps I did before. And in that sense, I'm less intimidated by them. I'm more impressed by them, and I probably like them better.
Yeah, and it shows.
Because I realize what an effort it takes to be in front of the camera in terms of, and what a brave act it is to expose yourself, to be there in an element where you're being looked at and it's unfamiliar to you. And but at the same time, I think what makes the picture at the end of the day is a combination of a lot of effort in a lot of different directions that makes you look your best at that moment, and that moment is an illusion. I mean, for example, I could have somebody that you could see in a certain context is flawless, but that's because a certain part of their face, at a certain side of their face, is particularly photogenic, whereas if you looked at their face in aggregate without looking at it from that point of view, you wouldn't see them the same way.
My job is to try
and bring the best out of everybody and their spirit as well as their body parts.
That's fantastic. Richard, let's talk about this house.
Yeah.
Tell me about this 7-story house. I know when we spoke a couple of years ago, you were working on the grotto, I believe it was.
That came later. But I what happened is that I've lived in the same house for 20 years. And when I came, it was two stories and a loft. And I worked hard as a photographer from zero, in the sense that, you know, I never had a lesson and I didn't have any background in it at all, and I did it just as a way of having
fun. But I think you use your home so that you don't have to go out on location.
Yes. What I found as I got better, I found that the going out on location is something that, you know, takes a lot of effort, because I take lights, and since I do everything myself, it was sometimes quite an effort to load equipment, unload equipment, go long distances, etc., etc. So, you know, I do a certain amount on location, but I found after a fairly short while in Hollywood that there were compromises involved in going to locations. Sometimes it'd be like a safety issue, you know, do I want to go downtown at night and set up some lights in the street? No, I think it's dangerous. That's not what I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
I also found if I shot at other people's houses, but there were compromises that other people were prepared to make that I'm not prepared to make, and I broke with a number of photographers based on my views. I think that there are a number of guys who have big houses, and they say, well, you know, you can use my house, you have to pay, but you have to introduce me to the girl. I would say to the guys, no, I'm not going to. You know, you do your own dirty work. I just want to shoot, and I'm not here to pimp for you, basically.
Right.
And I think that that's quite widespread with a certain class of person in Los Angeles. And so I decided this wasn't going to get me very far, because I wasn't going to do that. So I became determined, as I felt after many years, that I deserved a studio, and if I was to expand, needed one. I then said to myself, well, I'm not prepared to, you know, get up and be a slave to a studio. I'm not prepared to travel miles to go to one and worry about security at night and worry about having employees having to watch it and open it for me. So I thought, instead of paying money for a landlord, let me try and see with the city if I could build the studio in my own place.
Mm-hmm. And your home now is 7 levels?
Well, I started, it was quite imaginative. I found that if you went through, I found a loophole in the planning laws that allowed me to create a big studio underneath, believe it or not, my pool. And by digging out about 150 tons of rock over 2 years.
Wow.
And that doubles as a disco. I mean, what is a studio? It's a big room, and I put in disco lighting, so really I use it as both. And
oh,
like,
I see.
I happen to keep it immense, you know, totally tidy, so any time that you'd see it night or day, it would be instantly, you know, it would be, you know, either a very nice room or a studio when I want it to be, or a disco when I want it to be. And then I found that having done that, I was able to build other rooms around and other levels really without really encroaching on getting into trouble with the planning, city planning, and ended up with multiple levels. I had, I have a flat roof, so I opened up an access to my roof, and in building my studio disco, I had big caissons that it all had to rest on in the hills in order to to conform with geological requirements.
Oh, I see.
And so I thought, well, since there are big caissons, you know, I've got technically a level that's underneath my studio. I'll just enclose drywall around that, and I'll build a grotto. And then the city let me have another level, which I turned into a casino and a disco and a cinema. But the point is that this is my studio. It happens to be wonderful living space, and it's kept immaculate all the time. It's not some sort of big mess. But I found that it was much more pleasant to have my own environment where I could control all my lighting, where people would come to me, where I'd be comfortable on my home ground. And so a lot of my work's been done there. I do shoot outside, but less and less.
Well, we're getting close to the end of this particular interview, but before we go, I have a few things I would just like to talk to you about, and just get some quick responses from you before we run out of time. And everyone is always fascinated by your philosophy, and I'm gonna throw out some philosophy questions to you if you don't mind, Richard.
Sure.
How do you view the difference, say, between glamour and just sexy photos? I mean, or what's your thoughts on that?
I don't really have very strong views about that. I think that it's generalizations are not really
I think
I can look at a lot of images and see them as very sexy and admire the composition and admire all the elements that go into it. The glamour world as such doesn't really mean that much to me. I think that, it's always been an ill-defined and rather frowned upon extension of, I suppose, fashion photography. It's like, you don't, it's more about, you know, body and sexuality, and therefore it's never been really totally acceptable. There are relatively few magazines that are respectable, I suppose, in the glamour world. I think a lot of the magazines are geared to the lowest common denominator. They just want to see, you know, I was shooting for American Curves magazine, which is a nice people that run the magazine, but what do they really want to see? They just want to see booty and boobs.
Yeah,
and a lot of the other magazines are like that as well. And a lot of other magazines are softcore nude, and a lot of magazines are hardcore nude. I don't really have a problem with any of it in moderation. I do have a problem when it becomes excessive and it becomes that, you know, our culture is too fixated on lowest common denominator.
I do
try to elevate the models so that, you know, there's something always interesting going on that enhances the picture in their environment and isn't geared to the lowest common denominator. But that's it's hard to strike that balance sometimes.
Yeah, and I know that your views on publishing. How do you see, say, in the next 5 or 10 years? How do you see hard copy magazines? What's the future for publishing?
I guess it won't die out, but we're living in an extraordinary, interesting time where it never happened before. I think that the speed at which we're transitioning out of the written word into the internet is quite astonishing. The fact that I think that our grandchildren, if not our children, 30 years on, will be utterly astonished that we used to chop down trees in order to make something called paper, in order to use up that precious
that's
resource,
a good point.
In order to read from
yeah.
when you could have read it all out of your Kindle, if that's what there is in 30 years. Whatever the advance on Kindle will probably all be holographic or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that, you know, I think we're transitioning out of the paper world, if you like, the printed world, with incredible speed. And so in that sense, probably it's very much dying. I think in every magazine is hemorrhaging because of this. So I think we haven't worked out yet how to transition to the net. Obviously, it's early in its stages. The iPad is absolutely revolutionized.
The laptop,
computers. I mean,
yeah.
it's revolutionized the laptop, but it's you know, there's so many now ways of treating your iPad as a combination of Kindle and as a combination of reading a newspaper in a different form, which clearly, you know, Rupert Murdoch has been attempting to make the first deliberately iPad-based magazine. I think that's the future. So I think there will be less and less publishing. More of it will be on the Internet, and that's going to be a problem for photographers because monetization is going to be an increasingly difficult problem for
yeah.
the professional. I think that as far as professionals are concerned, there's just going to be less and less money in glamour photography. There's a school of thought that, in fact, still photography as we know it will eventually disappear. It'll be replaced by the
YouTubes and the Ustreams.
No, I don't mean in that sense. I'm really talking about the technical breakthroughs in camera technology, the fact that we're transitioning now into cameras that combine video. I think you'll be able to possibly in the future have such a superb video image that you'll be able to, instead of taking stills, that you'll be able to take your stills from the image itself that has been shot as video.
Fantastic.
I can tell you that I know that sounds a bit far-fetched, but I can tell you that the top lighting pros in Sammy's, which is one of the top places in the country that I go to, I can tell you that that's partially their opinion.
Yeah, fantastic. Richard, we're gonna have to end it for now, but as always, it's been a great pleasure from eGrow News Magazine, and we look to many, many more interviews.
Well, I thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to chat, and I hope your readers enjoy some of the content we talked about, and they're welcome to contact me directly if they have any feedback or questions.
Fantastic. Thank you, Richard.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.